and Honorable Eunice Karim, members of NA, NCOP, chairpersons dealing with finance matters in provinces, officials from Treasury, Commissioner SARS, officials from Parliament, and our guests who are in the gallery, you are welcome. The meeting is officially open. Let's move to the next item. Apologies. Are there apologies? Alan? Where is Alan? Cindy? Sister Debo? Okay, we haven't received any apology. Let's move to item three, briefing by the Minister of Finance, Minister Mboweni. You can start with the briefing. Yeah, members of Parliament and legislatures. You are welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair. And all protocol observed. I think you have laid out the protocol very well. I couldn't do much better than that. So the medium-term budget policy statement was submitted yesterday to the National Assembly. And simultaneously we tabled a number of bills. I suppose the most important one is the adjustment of estimates bill. We gave a broad submission on what the key challenges are. Let me restate the fundamental challenges and contradictions. The central and fundamental issue that confronts us in South Africa is economic growth and development. And related to that, obviously, are substantial matters of the empowerment of the historically disempowered, the restructuring of the economy in general. So these growth issues are very key, because it is out of a growing economy that we will be able to obtain more revenue for expenditure and investment, subject to a well-functioning South African Revenue Service and a population that pays tax, including Honorable Shiva. A population that pays tax and all other service-related payments that must be done. So we have to find measures to to boost economic growth and development in a low revenue environment with high expectations for expenditure. So it's a concoction of contradictions. But within that concoction of contradictions, I think we need to find a pathway for growth and development. So it might not be quite evident in the medium-term budget policy statement that actually there are attempts boosting the economy. Whether it's about supporting tourism, supporting agriculture, supporting the reimagined industrial strategy, supporting industrial parks such as in Sishiru, Nkongwa, Butshabelo, Dimbaza, Eshowe, and so on. Working very closely with municipalities to sort out water issues, water and sanitation issues, trying to get heavy load trucks off our highways onto the railways, and so on and so forth, as they say in the Eastern Cape, and so on and so forth. So those are the growth issues that we must continue to focus on despite a very difficult fiscal situation. As I say, Chair, we will be able to achieve our objectives when the economy is growing and we're able to receive higher revenues. We are faced with a conundrum. Low growth, low revenue collection, high expectations on expenditure, and a growing fiscal deficit. And that presents us with a huge challenge, because a growing deficit by logical extension will result in higher debt. And higher debt, again by logical extension, means that we are left with very few resources. I'm learning how to use this word. It's called resources. In the private sector, we just call it the budget. We're therefore left with few resources for social and economic investment. So, Mr. Chairperson, the problem that we're facing is that the debt to GDP levels are rising. In fact, the debt service costs are rising so fast that debt service costs are becoming a significant charge on the fiscus. And now if the first thing you're going to do when you allocate your resources is to pay for debt, then you're in trouble. You must do something about it. Do something about it. And and that's what we're trying to do in this medium-term budget policy statement. The actual budget is in February. As I emphasized yesterday, it's not the budget. The budget is in February. This is an indicative statement about where we're going to go. I think the confusion has come about because we simultaneously tabled these other bills. And so people think this is the budget. It's not the budget. It's an indicative pathway. Well, of course, we do indicate that where there's been some appropriations here and there, we do indicate that we'll deal with it. But really, the statement is not meant for that. So, let me conclude my opening remarks by saying that what then are the biggest risks that we face? Number one is low revenues, which I said put pressure on the fiscals. Number two, the state-owned companies. Eskom, SAA, SA Express, DINEL, South African Broadcasting Corporation, Alexco, yes, those are the big ones. Third is the public sector wage bill under the item compensation of employees. And whether Faith Mutambi likes it or not, she was part of creating this problem. And Richard Baloyi. We now are stuck in a situation where the public sector wage bill is a significant challenge that we must deal with. And of course, we have to enter into agreements and negotiate and deal with that. Finally, the risk to this fiscal framework is what we call fiscal leaks, particularly in the form of litigation against the state and the state organs, medical litigation, which were initially concentrated in Gauteng, but they have now moved to the Eastern Cape. Police, litigation against the police, and others. Put together, if those litigations were to be called today, that would amount to about 100 billion rand, excuse me, in litigations. And of course, the last element in fiscal leaks is corruption and theft of state resources, which the law enforcement agencies must deal with decisively. I thought I would make those opening remarks, and Dondo and his team, as usual, will do a better job than myself. In taking you through the numbers, but recalling that this is a medium-term budget policy statement, an indicative path. On that note, Chair, thank you very much. I'm an extremely exhausted man. I hope you let me go at our first one. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, sir. Minister, where is the teacher? Are you going to make a presentation on the PowerPoint? Okay, teacher, finance, you are welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good afternoon, honourable members. Thank you for giving us the opportunity once more to come before you to present the medium-term budget policy statement. Minister has touched on a number of key issues that underpin the statement, but we'll just go into a little bit of detail and we'll then engage members. And thank you very much. The Parliament can
Dr. Ndlozi, it has been sent to us electronically. And
yeah, it's poor way of doing PowerPoint. You don't do PowerPoint like this. You are straining our eyes. This is not PowerPoint.
So you don't have a document before you?
I do, but this is wrong.
Focus on what you have on paper. Okay. Dr. DJ.
Thank you very much. We try to be more detailed in terms of explaining, because that was the request of previous engagements with Parliament. But however, I'll go into the details. At the time of the budget, we said we will grow, the economy, South African economy will grow at 1.5%. This budget is doing is to actually project that downwards, and we revised the growth downwards to 0.5% because long-term growth has fallen. And this is mainly as a result of lower than anticipated revenue collections. We then indicate the number because clearly there are challenges there. If there's no growth, then there's no revenue. And again, underpinning this is the fact that we're putting on the table also to say there are challenges, and maybe at the question time, the commissioner will deal with that in terms of what challenges are there to collect revenues from a SARS administration point of view. The spending pressures continue to mount. ESCOM in particular, we had to make provisions for ESCOM, including the public service wages. Therefore, we are proposing an approach over the medium term that will restore the momentum of growth and stabilize public finances. The only and easier way to understand what we're saying...
Can I suggest something, if the meeting agrees? This is unusual. We're finishing at 2 o'clock, right, instead of 3. And secondly, the minister wants to leave at 13:30. So in view of the fact that you have taken us through some of these issues, can you be briefer than normal? And as you'll remember, we normally allocated you 15 minutes at most. And I would suggest that's where we stay, if that's agreeable to the majority. So that we have just an hour to ask questions. And in fact, the minister leaves at 13:30, which I'm not sure whether the committee agrees on. It's a decision the committee must agree on. Because it's a standard thing, the minister has to be here. And we appreciate where he is. But also, that's a matter that Parliament must decide. But anyway, is it agreeable to the meeting that we restrict him to 15 minutes?
Chair, but where's the minister going at 13:30? Because he's supposed to present the framework here.
Yeah, I think, Minister, you can stay till 4.
Can the minister stay until the end of the meeting? I think the meeting can take that resolution.
I was just requesting.
It's only half an hour more instead of... So can we suggest, I would like to propose as a co-chair, that the minister remains here till 5 to 2. Good. Shall we move on then? 10 minutes, I think, because people need to ask questions. There are four committees here. Good, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was going to say the summary of this budget is in four parts. We are saying that we want to stabilize public finances, and that remains a key. Secondly, we are saying it's important and critical that we promote investment and growth, and we indicated the kind of elements that will make that possible, and those elements are found in the growth towards the growth and strategy document that we published in August, and that the second draft of that version was also released yesterday. So we're anchoring moving forward that particular aspect. Number three, stabilizing state-owned companies. And then that's where we then talk in detail about ESCOM and the kind of support we're giving to ESCOM. The ESCOM paper outlines key issues. Everyone is waiting for us to say something about ESCOM debt. On that, we are saying, Chair, that let's fix ESCOM before we can start talking about how to take over or to address the debt situation at ESCOM. You can give them reprieve today. When you don't fix ESCOM as a business, as a business that's supposed to provide a service, you'll have a problem. So our thinking on that is that ESCOM and the ESCOM Treasury should do the same what the National Treasury would do on the government finances. In a situation where your debt obligations are becoming unsustainable, what we've been doing the last few years is to cut budgets, is to exercise restraint, to cast inefficiency in Spain, etc. We would want ESCOM to do that, and that must be led by the board there and the management. And then debt, most of it of which is guaranteed, will be behind it and stand behind it. Four, underpinning this budget is that we want to improve spending efficiencies and reducing waste. So if we have to remember what the medium-term budget 2019 was all about, these are the four aspects that we want to anchor the messaging and anchor the issues that we are presenting. The other then becomes just addition. Stabilizing public finance quickly, debt to GDP, if we don't do anything, remains unsustainable, and it will really make it difficult for this framework to actually be sustainable in future. And we are proposing, therefore, that over and above the cuts that we exercise in this budget, there's also an area around wage bill that we must address. And that's where we lift the number and say, if over and above the 80 billion that you're proposing over 3 years in terms of cuts, there's about 150 billion worth of measures. That these are wage bill measures that we have to exercise, and we are just lifting that, noting and acknowledging what the minister indicated yesterday and this morning, that it means then intensive engagements with labour to try and claw back on essentially what is an unsustainable area. In promoting investment and growth, I did talk about the paper and how important to anchor those. Stabilizing state-owned companies is not only Eskom, but a number of them. Part of this budget, we also listed the kind of support that we give to other small entities. But the principle here is that state-owned companies should be able to function on their own without government support or shareholder support. If they are not able to run as businesses, I think what we've always said is that some we should consider some of them, closing some of them down. We should consider some other options that may be available. And around improving, finally, this is the last point and I'll be done, improving spending efficiency and reducing waste, we still think there's a lot of wastage in the system, despite the procurement regime that we have. If the procurement regime says you must get 3 quotations, and you have to, as an example, buy a computer. A computer, the cheapest maybe, if you want an HP, a certain size, with certain speeds, you'll still get 3 quotations of 10, 15, 20,000 rand. And because you have gone through a procurement process, that underpins our current procurement framework, which we have to relook. And what the minister said yesterday is that we'll be focusing on that. Look at areas to strengthen that area on the public procurement, with the idea of releasing the public procurement bill once it's gone through cabinet. Secondly, relook at areas of the MFMA and PFMA that needs to be checked. So when you know you can get this computer, the example I gave, for 3,000 rand, you cannot go to Macro and get it. But because the public procurement says get 3 quotations and 3 individuals submit the quotation, the cheapest is 10,000, it's way above the current market prices. So we think with that idea, that's how we want to approach how best do we improve in order to save. And reducing waste, Minister gave a few examples yesterday. We will be issuing guidelines and treasury instructions in this regard around what we mean and the kind of areas that the Minister spoke about or mentioned in the speech yesterday. Example meaning being when I class several of officials, whether it's per diem or S&T allowances, etc., we'll be issuing instructions to that effect. And the current thinking and the current discussions, once final approval, is that we want to do this with implementation from the 1st of December. So, Chair, I will stop there because clearly I tried to summarize what this budget is, and we can then take questions. Thank you.
Thanks, DG, for the presentation. Now we'll allow members to ask clarity-seeking questions and comment. It will be strictly 2 minutes. We have a stopwatch here. because he didn't want the minister to be here till 2, so that we don't. Even the deputy minister has got pressure of time. He has to go to the NCOP this afternoon for the SCOM bill at 1:30. So let me take questions and comments. Honorable Mrolong. Louis, Dr. Honorable Swart, Joseph, yes, Akbar Vessels, Oops.
or Sheikh Honorable Shivamba. Hey, Louis, I've noted you. We are done this time. Any comment or questions from legislatures? Comrade PC. Okay. For now, let me take those hands. Honorable Muro.
Well, no, thank you very much, Sir Person. Minister, Honorable Minister, the projected debt to GDP ratio amounts to about 70%. Are we not really burdening future generations? Two, is that if we consider the impact of government officials traveling to Cape Town on the fiscus, have we not considered establishing or setting up a state-of-the-art video conferencing center in Pretoria so that we can increase productivity and we can cut costs? While cost-cutting measures on cell phones and travels are quite commendable, but how significant are the savings that we are likely to incur? Have we considered regulating international trips so that we can, you know, lessen the burden on the fiscus? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Muro. You were exemplary. It took 1 minute 15 seconds. Honorable Lewis.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Minister. I'm just referring to the budget review book on page 22, figure 3.2. You set out the debt projections, gross debt to GDP projections. In your presentation, you say that debt is forecast to stabilize by 25. But actually, if you look at these projections, I don't see any stabilization occurring. Never mind just in 2025, but actually way beyond then. With financial support for Eskom, debt goes to 81% in 2027-28. So can I just ask how you come to say that debt will stabilize in 2025 at 71.3%? It doesn't seem to match with your own projections. Then if you just go to page 61, if you would, that summarizes the financial support to Eskom over the next few years. Can I just clarify that in addition to the 230 billion rand spread over 10 years, the 10 billion rand listed in this table is new for next year. So far as I know, that has not previously been announced. That's an additional 10 billion. Please just confirm that that understanding is correct. Then just something that you said in your speech yesterday when you said that further financial support to Eskom would be classified as loans. Now, as I understand it, that would just be nothing but creative accounting. That allows you to keep the loan on the asset side of your balance sheet and make your financial position look better, when in fact you know that Eskom has no hope of repaying those loans. That's why you're also simultaneously considering a massive debt swap or debt relief of some sort. So what is the point of that other than just creative accounting? Then your speech was silent on the sale of Eskom assets.
You are left with 20 seconds.
Thank you, I'll be done. Your speech was silent on the sale of Eskom assets, although Treasury has spoken about this in the past, including in your two papers that you released. I wonder if you'd say a word on that, please. And then could I ask you for your position on the immediate shutting down of SA Express? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Lewis. Honorable Sart.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Just very briefly, we share the concerns about the debt-to-GDP ratios and the increase in budget deficits. I'd just like to ask SARS, Mr. Kiesbitter, the changes in the outlook, minus 52.5 billion collected for this year, minus 84 billion, and minus 114.7 billion. Surely with the introduction of the big business unit, how accurate will those figures be going forward? Because that is clearly a very important aspect to the collection of SARS. Secondly, Minister, the issue of corruption, which you have referred to very briefly, we welcome the additional amounts to NPA, Hawks, SIU, but do we appreciate the fact that they can, if you double their budgets even, they can collect tens of billions of rands now with the additional powers of the special tribunals. And that is something I would really look, given the fact that we estimate 500 billion was lost through corruption. The issue, I would also ask Minister, the engagement with Moody's at this stage. We know they are going to bring out the assessment in 2 days. What has been your engagement with Moody's? What is their assessment of the medium-term budget, if you're able to comment on that at this stage? And then the very important issue that you raised in your speech about SOCs, no more bailouts, but instead of loans. Now, we know in June 3, 2015, the minister converted a 60 billion rand loan to equity. So we've been there before. What is the chance of you given a loan and then it is converted to equity down the road? We appreciate your concerns, but we've followed this path before. But at the end of the day, we've got to ensure that we stabilize the SOCs, so we fully appreciate your efforts in that regard. One last question, and that relates to the comments of the National Union of Mine Workers that say if you unbundle Eskom, we are going to close down the power stations. That might be more pertained to the Minister of Public Enterprises, but maybe you'd like to comment on that as well, because clearly that impacts on our whole economy. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. 1 minute, 50 seconds. And thanks very much, Honorable Schwar. Honorable Joseph.
Thank you for the opportunity. I welcome the comment by the Minister on particularly the area of tourism. I think it's a great opportunity for us to grow the economy and also agri, particularly exports. I want to know if we are satisfied with the amount of people that works in public sector, and particularly SOEs. I'm referring to headcounts here. When last was the last headcount done, and do we know how many people we must pay? Because that, if that is not sorted out, then we have a problem still to control finances. And then the negotiations, the big elephant in the room, the wages. I want to know if, because I heard Eskom has settled for 3 years already, 7%, if I'm correct, where do we draw the line in terms of instructions, or what is binding and what is up for negotiations when it comes to wages? I think Treasury must just guide us. Where do we stop and where do we start as Parliament or as departments to help reduce the expenditure and to even stop corruption as far as coast workers is concerned? Thank you.
Thanks. 1 minute, 2 seconds. Vesat Akbar.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, with regards to, I'm covered on Moody's to a large extent, but there's a lot of predictions that they will downgrade, and research panels that have a consensus that we will be downgraded on Friday. Did National Treasury take into account what effect that will have on the country, what effect that will have on our debt as well? And what is there any plan with regards to that? Then with regards to, I'm covered on SA Express, but I just want to reiterate the question, why not sell SA Express now immediately? There's plans with regards to SAA with an equity partner, but SA Express, the speech was silent on to a large extent, and ElexCorp as well. Why not sell ElexCorp now? Then there was discrepancies between the speech that was distributed beforehand and the speech that you delivered, Minister, especially with regards to ETO. Could you explain why there was a difference in the speech that we received and that was published? It said that government resolved that ETO will remain, but the speech you delivered differed. There was also a difference in the amount on the cars for the executive that differed. The speech distributed said 700K. You said 800K. And then just one last point on a priority. Your speech was silent on food security and on the imminent danger of water scarcity. There's no reprioritization of funds towards water infrastructure. And with we can address job security, but without food security, we are becoming a food insecure country. We are facing a drought. Is there any plan to address that? I know there's no funds, but it doesn't help. We're prioritizing economic growth, but we're not food secure. Thank you, Jacob.
Imam Sheikh, I think you...
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Minister, for your presentation. Minister, you said to us in terms of South African Airways, you know exactly what the problems are. So could you tell us what are really the obstacles in trying to address those problems and get South African Airways into a profitable organization? Now, Minister, one of the things we find on the ground is that business is at a standstill. Many, many businesses are suffering as a result of not enough money in circulation. Would you not consider at some stage reducing that, but strengthening your revenue collection so that there's more money in circulation, which could boost the economy? That for us, many of the businesses are presently complaining about it. The other issue is the money that we are losing because of value of money, and I see you've touched on that. But remember, this has been going on for year in and year out, where we've been addressing that there's over 200 some odd billion that is being lost because you're not getting value for money in the country. Now, what is Treasury going to do differently now to address this and ensure there's some standardizing of prices and that they can be compared with? And I gave an example the other day of a municipality where A gave the job, it was given to A to B, B to C, C to D. D got paid 500,000, but A got 2 million. So you see where the money is basically going. So if you can just tell us what you can basically do in terms of that. And then your illicit financial flows. Are you engaging with even local government, who should be having control of all the industries and businesses in the areas? Because I can tell you a very great percentage of particularly foreign businesses are not paying taxes in the country. And there's no way for you to be able to monitor and do anything about that. So what are you doing about that to try and bring in that additional revenue?
Thank you. Next is Mr. Shivambu.
No, thank you, Chairperson. One minister, we're not going to pay for e-tolls, and it is our constitutional obligation to defy unjustified tolls. It's a form of protest, so whatever you do, whatever you see, and there won't be any form of enforcement that will force us residents of Gauteng to pay e-tolls. It's not going to happen. In terms of the debt that the money that is owed to Eskom by municipalities, why don't you write it off? Or on the municipalities that are owing Eskom, you deduct from the allocation from the national treasury to the municipalities. But in relation to Soweto, it's individuals who are owing Eskom, and those individuals is unemployed people or social grants recipients. Even if you can take the army to want to demand the money, the so-called 18 billion rand that is owed to Eskom by Soweto residents, you won't get it. Even if you can kill them and do whatever, you will never get it. So the only logical thing to do is to write off the Eskom debt. It doesn't make any sense in relation to the ordinary residents of Soweto. You can keep on making noise and noise forever and ever. They can't pay it. And the sooner you accept that, the better in terms of what should happen. You spoke about the defense procurement of food from the local people. Why don't you look into the broader perspective of amending the procurement policies, including the PFMA, to enforce domestic procurement, like procurement of domestically produced goods and products and services. That is how we are going to increase economic activity, then increase economic growth, and then you deal with the revenue shortfalls that are talking about. Let us, because majority of the things, if you were to trace the origins of the products and the services that the state procures, you will find that majority of that comes from outside. We have spoken about this for the entirety of the 5th Parliament on the issue of tax avoidance and profit shifting. There is no believable plan from SARS in terms of how do you tackle tax avoidance and profit shifting. There are cosmetic issues that are being spoken about, but there are legislative issues that have to be dealt with in terms of how do we deal with that. Are you maximally taxing e-commerce? Are you maximally taxing Uber? Are you maximally taxing what we buy in Amazon in terms of both VAT and income tax? Because those are companies that are operating just like any other company that's operating here in South Africa. And those are the revenue leaks that must be looked into in terms of all of those issues. And I think that the
Your mentioning of industrial policy.
25 minutes, 7 left, Honorable Shimon.
In terms of economic policy and economic growth, you cosmetically mentioned reimagining industrial policy without saying what exactly that is. Now you are mentioning the industrial parks in Siho, in Tabanchue, wherever you have mentioned. But one thing that you should know is that you cannot divorce industrial policy from trade policy or tariff policy broadly and strategic import substitution. In terms of what should happen, because you can have a textile manufacturer in Siho, but against competition from whoever brings a textile from China, you will not have that as sustainable industries. Not that is just an example, but there are so many products that cannot be sustainable. So to speak it in passing, we are just saying it because you think it's an obligation to say it, but there is no clear commitment to increasing economic activity, therefore growth, and therefore broaden the base for revenue collection. That is basically our quick observations. We'll deal with other issues like the relocation of Parliament to Victoria, so that we do not have to deal with these issues of whether business class or economy class, because in any way there's no price differences between economy and business class in the current monies which Parliament pays for travel purposes.
Okay. We'll allow members to make the follow-up questions after the minister, the deputy minister, will have responded. Is it in PC or Malima that side?
It's in PC, Chair. Thank you very much. No, Chair, I'm covered on the issues of the e-toll, but I just want to emphasize, Minister, that the President Ramaphosa has given the Minister of Finance and Minister of Transport, as well as the Premier of Gauteng, to have a meeting to find the lasting solutions on the e-toll. But we don't know how far these discussions are at this stage. And yesterday, because we had a lockup and we received a different delivery of speech when we delivered your speech from what we had on this matter of e-toll. If you could further clarify us on that one. Because we are from Gauteng and we know that the Premier has pronounced in his State of the Province address that e-toll has no life in the province. And those countries must actually be stopped to count the cars that are passing by. The second one is the issuing of the guidelines on the travelling expense and the paydiums that are given to members. And those are the issues that you're going to give to the various departments, and also you have encouraged the National Assembly and the legislatures to look at. How are you going to enforce that particular guideline for implementation? Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Mpisi. Honorable Tipo Peters.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thanks to the Minister and the DG for their presentations. Minister, with regard to the municipal debt, I think one of the members did speak to that particular point. Is it not possible that COCTA and National Treasury work on a formula or a proper way of dealing with the municipal debt, municipality debts to ESCOM? In particular, looking at top slicing municipal budgets to cover the debt that they owe to ESCOM, primarily because ESCOM will never win if they take municipalities to court for this particular debt, primarily because it is not the ordinary people and businesses that actually owe ESCOM, but the municipality. So I think it is important that National Treasury and COCTA work on a solution for this matter. But also, with regard to individual households, is it not proper for us to have a situation where there is one meter, one household type of intervention? This will help identify those indigent households Honorable Shibambo was referring to, in particular if you speak about the debt in Soweto, because you'd have a situation where when the municipality does their indigent registers, the household don't qualify, primarily because of the number of different households, those who live in the garages, the back rooms, and the sheds in the yard. Then the senior citizen, who is the main mustens, owner of the house, would not qualify for indigent, primarily because of the income levels of those who live in this particular yard. So I would believe that one household, because those are many households in one yard that needs to be identified, that probably are draining on the supply to the main household. The other issue is with regard to
25 seconds
to the eat halls. Is it not proper to introduce some kind of fuel tax for housing and look at how to address this particular issue? Lastly, Minister, your statements about 29,000 millionaires, I don't think it sits well, because there's now a picture that public servants who are equally sometimes not even qualifying for RDP houses are being seen as millionaires, your MPs and all those others. I think the couching of that statement is problematic.
Thanks, Honorable Peters. Honorable Karim.
Yeah, I'll also stick to 2 minutes, so you can time me if you want, but I'm timing myself. Very quickly, firstly, look, DG especially, but also Minister. These are very uncertain, unpredictable times. I know it's very difficult. But don't you think for too many years now, Treasury is getting the economic forecast wrong? And you're slashing the economic growth rate by two-thirds. You said 1.5%, it's a 0.5%. We've raised this question repeatedly in the previous era. The Treasury needs to be more modest about what's possible and more realistic. Surely lessons are being learned. Secondly, to me it seems at least that SASE is doing well under the circumstances. And I think the overall leader and your team with you are doing well. But I think Treasury needs to support you more to get going on issues that might be hiccups and so on. And I think you need much more support from Treasury, not interfering in your internal decision-making and operations, but in supporting you to do what you're required to do in terms of the law and the Constitution. So we would like Treasury, I think, to do that. Thirdly, we're raising, with due respect, most of us are new members here, so it's fine, Comrade Chair, but we keep raising the same issues year after year after year. Ask the Keledi, ask Mr. Shivambu. So take illicit financial flows. There's been no significant progress between 2014 and 2019. You're trying very hard, I know. I read in the media what's happening, and I know that the National Assembly Committee meets with you, Mr. Kiswata, Commissioner. But I'm saying that what we need to do perhaps, and we've raised this before, Comrade Koche, the staff need to now list the questions we've raised this time around. So that when we come back in February, we're not raising the same questions again. We must ask Treasury to respond. What progress now? And February and the budget comes. The same would apply next October, Comrade Chair. Otherwise, we're going to keep asking the questions. And finally, Treasury is where it is. The economy is where it is because we fail to do our oversight role. There's always folding our arms and carping and criticizing Treasury. What does Parliament do to effect our oversight role in terms of the Constitution? We are complicit. There's no use looking at the Minister and Treasury. What have we done? So in short, can't we, the four committees, agree? And in our report, make that clear. These are the recommendations we've got. We're not going to ask the same questions again. So Mr. Kiswata and DG and Minister, when you come here in February, we want to know what progress there's been on illicit financial flows. You traumatized us yesterday. Matters beyond your control, right? We understand, Minister. But then, why in your speech are you not focusing more on the billions that are leaving this country? And this is big capital. What are we doing about that? Thank you. And finally, one report, I want to remind you, the fact that we're a new parliament doesn't mean that everything that happened in the past falls away. We have repeatedly written to the president, we've repeatedly alerted the endless ministers that keep changing. Minister, I hope you'll stay. Not that I necessarily agree with you on many things, in fact on most things, but you are the minister and hopefully for stability you'll stay. But we asked for an inter-ministerial committee on illicit financial flows. We said, Minister, without taking the role of the executive, the deputy minister, that we cannot prescribe to the president inter-ministerial committees. But for 4 years, we've in our reports put, We recommend to the minister, president, to set up an interministerial committee on illicit financial flows. Where is that? In February, you come, minister, can you please give us a report on that? Thank you.
I'm sorry, I went over about 1 minute, but partly it's a legacy thing. I'll stick to 2 minutes.
Normally, no, I do ask the lady. I always stick to 2 minutes. Again, unlike a certain member of an opposition party who spoke for over 3 minutes, but that's fine.
No. How does the lady come in to you taking another thing?
No, I won't do it again. I'm very good.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Karim. Minister, Deputy Minister, DG, can you please respond to those questions and comments?
And do I go after that?
Not yet, Minister. I'll take the second round of follow-up questions, then we'll release you.
You? Questions have been pouring like a waterfall. Some of the questions I can see, members miss me here. So I'll come and visit you often. I'll also invite you to the house for a braai. I think we can spend more time to capture you. The debt to GDP ratios, I will not burdening future generations. The answer is, if we don't manage this debt to GDP ratios very well, we will be burdening the future generations. The debt to GDP ratio in 2016-17 was around 15.6%. Now, it's galloping now towards the 80.9% GDP. So, I know when one speaks to members of parliament, one needs to be a bit more clearer. So GDP, where is the GDP table? So GDP at current prices in 2017 was 4.6 trillion. 2018 it was 4.8 trillion. The estimate for 2019 is 5.1 trillion. So if, for example, 2019, if 60%, if debt to GDP ratio is about 60%, it means closely about 3 trillion goes to the debt to GDP ratio. Now, that's in my book, that's unsustainable. I know that most of you read all kinds of literature, and part of the literature will say debt doesn't matter. It depends on the composition of the debt. Well, I'm sorry to say, debt matters. I disagree with those who say debt doesn't matter. Of course it matters. It matters because, for example, when you look at the annual growth in consolidated spending, you notice that debt service costs are now a huge item, about 13.7%. So you can't say it doesn't matter. It matters because it becomes the first charge on the fiscus. That means, by definition, you are not in a position to fund health, economic development, social development, learning and culture, and so on. It's a reality. And the other reality, as well debated very strongly in the literature, is that if you are not a reserve currency country, you cannot afford these high levels of debt. So don't let us compare ourselves with the United States, that they have a huge debt, but they're okay. That's a reserve currency country. We are not. I don't know, Honorable Shibambo, whether you remember what Karl Marx said about debt. Debt is a very bad thing. So, yes, we might be betting the future generations. And so what do we do about this? Because if somebody visited us here from Mars and found us sitting here and said, what sort of people are these who sit and complain about their situation? What are they going to do about it? And leadership is about having to do something about a difficult situation. So we have to arrest the growth in debt. How do we arrest it? You have to contain your expenditure and grow the economy so that you can have more revenue. That's what you do. If you've got three BMWs at home and your income is collapsed, what do? You sell some of them in order to make ends meet. That's what you do. So will we sell some assets? Yes, we will. Will we reduce costs in many areas? Yes, we will. I still have to have a conversation with the Minister of International Relations and Development and Cooperation about, for example, rationalizing our missions abroad. It's a conversation to be had. And there are a number of things involving diplomatic costs that can be rationalized. Just an example. Conversation of the Chief of the Defense Force has come up with this creative thing about the project Operation Kubatla, where the Defense Force will now, let me give an example. Say there's a Defense Force base in Tzanin, for example. There's no need for them to receive tomatoes from the fresh produce market in Pretoria, because those same tomatoes came from ZZ2, which is next door. You see? So the transport cost of the tomatoes going to Joburg and back doesn't make sense, when you can go to Mwegis and go and buy the tomatoes directly there, 10 minutes drive. So, and correctional services, for example, has large farms which are not being productively utilized. They can feed themselves and also sell agricultural products to communities. Do something about this. Now that I'm told Busasa is out, they should cook for themselves, save money, and so on. So the number of things we can do, that many non-core assets in the hands of the state, those have to be sold. In fact, because there are so many of them, the danger of them disappearing is real. Because you can't, I mean, when I go home, I drive using the R101, unlike Honorable Shibambo uses the N1 because he likes to pay the tolls. So I use the R101. And along the way, you see old, unused Transnet properties, houses, just lying idle. So people are beginning to occupy them. So I'm saying, yes, will we sell some of the assets? Yes, we will sell some of the assets to make good the nation's coffers. South African Express, you know the answer. Okay, so you said you can go back to Hansard. There is no logic whatsoever in having South African Express and Air Link competing with one another, yet South African Airways owns about 3% of Air Link. Makes no sense whatsoever. Now, of course, the Minister of Public Service and Administration is dealing with this matter, but we are quite convinced that we should close South African Express. Either fold it into Air Link or just close it. And you can increase your shareholding in Air Link if you want. But you have a foothold already. You're a shareholder. And they are managing a business. I don't quite like their service because they're stingy, but they get you there. And they're profitable. So, but I understand that there are conversations between South African Airways and potential equity partners. I'm very pleased to hear about this. I hope conversations are positively conclusive so that we can move ahead. But I was told a story by the chief executive officer of South African Airways, which just boggles the mind. She says a whole spare engine disappeared from SA Technical Services at the airport. So it's this big thing. How did it leave the airport? Honestly, it just boggles the mind. An aircraft engine is a big thing. It disappeared. Unbelievable stuff. I mean, this is a stuff for the movies, man. We are in a situation where to give proper service to South African Airways, we fly the aircraft to Jordan, empty, and returns empty, because we have destroyed our capacity as South African Technical Services. And you want to hang on to this thing where large engines are lost? What for? For ideological reasons. What ideology is that? The ideology of theft. What is that? Under the guise of Marxism and state ownership.
Point of order. Point of order.
Sorry, Honourable. I know that you read a lot of this. So let me leave that alone. We'll have time to talk about it. Video conferencing facilities. The issue about video conferencing facilities is very helpful. It will cut this up and down business. Very helpful. But it doesn't solve the fundamental problem. Parliamentarians and the executive must agree to have one capital for the country. And that might have to be Pretoria. You see, at the conclusion of the Anglo-Boer War, when the Treaty of Vereeniging was signed, there was also a provision for the possibility of establishing one capital in Pretoria. So on Salt Spansberg Road in Pretoria, you see a huge amount of empty land there. That's where Parliament was supposed to be built. Just next where the Department of International Relations is now. It's a huge piece of land. That will explain why Brian Terran Estate is and the President's residence is. It was supposed to be consolidated there. In 1994, I was part of a subcommittee of cabinet which looked into the possibility of one capital. We came with a conclusion that said, actually, we should consolidate in Pretoria. And as an interim measure, let's refurbish the old Transvaal Radsaal on Church Square, which has enough accommodation for the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. And then the offices around Church Square, which we could revamp, which would become offices for members of Parliament and so on. So I submitted the report in 1994. The Cape Caucus, unorganized as it is, of the ANC, of the DA, the EFF was not there at that time, it was IFP. Yeah. The Cape Caucus organized a massive invisible campaign and the Cape Town municipality, and Derek Hanekom's brother, they launched a huge campaign here to keep the capital here. I can tell you, at the end of the sixth parliament, you would not have resolved that issue. At the end of the ninth parliament, you would not resolve that issue. So find a solution, people, please. Maybe we'll all go to Bloemfontein. Better there. How much savings do we expect to gain from these measures we announced? Let me just give you an example. On cell phones, cell phone usage in the state system, I think for 12 months up to July this year, the cost had been plus minus 5 billion rand. So it's not a small change to save on cell phones. It's huge. S&T, subsistence and travel. This one I know, I did indicate to the president that on this one, maybe we should just leave the Minister of Finance to do the determination because nobody will ever agree. But we're cutting that. Subsistence and travel. You see people traveling around the world, you meet most of them at shopping centers than at the meeting. So, international travel has to be managed and monitored by the relevant institutions. Take Parliament, it's up to Parliament to manage how MPs travel around. But there is no doubt, honourable members, that there's too much travelling. Uncoordinated. You find a minister arrives in Berlin, suddenly you find the mayor of this city and that's or premier. So uncoordinated. What message is being taken there? Menger Mush. So we need to coordinate that much better. And we need to avoid first class travel, please. The the loan facility, I think Tepiso can speak a little bit about that, DG. But basically, it's a basic thing. If, as Dondo was saying, if your grown-up children keep coming to you to ask for money, you just keep on giving them money, the sense of responsibility diminishes. But if you say, okay, fine, here is a family trust, you want to borrow money, go to the trust, but you must pay back. You have to pay back. But then there is, again, another conundrum. The conundrum is that these state-owned enterprises are owned by the state. The state is a shareholder. If it was in the private sector and a company got into liquidity problems, they would do a rights issue to be able to recapitalize the business. Now, in the state, there's no rights issue. It's just equity injection all the time by the state, and you're the only shareholder. You see, unlike, say, at Telkom, where Telkom is a mixed sort of economy type company because there's private sector there, there's a state there. When there's a rights issue, all of us have to inject liquidity. But in this instance, where the state is the sole owner, it means the taxpayer has to do the rights issue by injecting capital. And I think what we're saying is that there will be moments when it's clearly will be in a rights issue environment where we have to provide the allocation. There are times when really it's a liquidity mismatch issue, then the state-owned companies must approach that facility in the treasury to go and borrow at negotiated interest rates, which will probably be less than market rates. I'm looking at the piece of fear. So additional support to fight corruption, I agree with you, and the DG Dondo and the head of the prosecuting authority are in constant contact, and we have allocated additional money. We heard you very well, Mr. Honorable Swart, in the House, again and again. We've heard you, and we're already doing something about that. So we agree with you. Additional measures of support for SARS, we're working on that as well. We have to support SARS. I mean, there's no option. I mean, that's Caesar. So that we must support them so that people can render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar. And Caesar has a tendency of breaking bones if you don't pay. Honorable Close. The ratings agencies are our friends and our tormentors. So, I think it started in Poor's. Was it Standard Poor's? I was showing. Fish. Fish is really not impressed with us. And they said that you guys didn't go far enough. I will leave that DG Dondo to speak to them. Moody's, they have said that they will release their view tomorrow. And they were looking very carefully at our fiscal stance. So we'll see what they say. At the most, I hope they keep the rating where it is. But I'll ask the ACDP to help me in prayers. It's not looking good. So, but we'll keep the prayers. The staff in the National Treasury keeps a very close contact with the ratings agencies. They were due to have spoken to them as we go towards yesterday, but I asked them not to do it this time. I asked them not to do it this time, knowing that we are in a very difficult situation. There might be misunderstanding and so on. So, the NUM statement about ESCOM, I think it's something that's subject to negotiations and discussion and clarifying things amongst ourselves and understanding that we're in a difficult situation and that we should really try and work together as much as we can. There's two of them. but I think my experience from the time when I was Minister of Labour is that one must not be alarmed by initial statements issued, but be open to conversation and negotiations. The end result is usually different from the starting point. That's what negotiations is about, I suppose. So I think there will be negotiations there. South African Express has spoken about, SAA has spoken about. Oh, by the way, I discovered something, Honorable Shibambu. There are certain categories of workers at SAA who receive an allowance for arriving at work. When you sign arrival at work, you get an allowance. State-owned enterprises.
We must call it ANC government-owned companies,
no,
not the general state-owned.
I think it would be worse under the EFF. On the issue of procurement, I'm sure you heard yesterday what I said. I'm going to get the whole system of procurement, the whole system under the PFMA, the Municipal Finance Management Act, reviewed, because we've received so many complaints. But I have indicated to people that be careful sometimes what you ask for. The review might just about come back and say, tighten more. So, careful what you wish for. The illicit financial flows issue, I think we understand that, and then more discussion. And as far as movements of funds within municipalities are concerned and so on, it's a correct question, which requires lots of discussions with SALGA. And I've discovered recently that SALGA as an organization is actually my close ally more than I knew before. So I spend a bit of time talking to SALGA. It's very helpful. And they have a very mature leadership and a very well-known and renowned president, Uthembi. So, Salgai, so I walk into a shop in Pare. Pare is in the Free State. I wanted to buy a charger for my phone. Pare. I wanted to buy a charger for my phone, so I walk into the shop. Can I have a charger for this phone? Yes. Give me the charge. How much? 450 rand. Okay. I pay and I wait there. So this fellow said, can I help you, sir? I said, yes, I'm waiting for the receipt. He says, we don't have receipts. I said, what do you mean you don't have a receipt? What kind of a business is this? He says, no, I don't have a receipt. I said, do you have a business number? Well, what are you talking about? I'm saying a business registration number. Do you have a VAT number? No. How? Now, this is within a municipality. There has to be the registration and licensing to operate together with DTI, the local municipality, and so on. So some of the basic things that we can do to work, and we have to work with SAGA in this regard. The issue of ESCOM debt, who owes ESCOM, and so on. It's a very important matter. There's a basic principle in life. If you owe somebody, you pay back. It's as simple as all that. There's a reason why we introduce certain benefits, water and electricity, for indigents. Those people you're talking about in Orlando West and Orlando East are not indigent. You know that very well. You know. I can take you there and show you. It's true. But let's leave that. I'll take you there. No, it's So, you stay there, so you can't afford it. You've just destroyed your own
argument. We stay with the people there. We know the challenge.
Okay, all right. So those who owe ESCOM must pay, whether it's individuals, it's municipalities, or national government departments. We have to pay each other. And we have thought about top slicing. But you know, if for example a municipality owes ESCOM and we deduct from them, it might mean that services which are due to the local people are going to suffer as a result of the actions of the municipality. It's like this thing we've been doing where if municipalities have not spent certain funds, we take that amount back. You know, it has been brought to our attention that, in fact, you're taking away the money from the people, not from the council, actually. So we have to find a way to deal with that, that difficulty. So, but we're thinking about it. Let me end off by saying, I'm sorry about the millionaires thing, but it's true. Everybody who earns more than 1.1 million is a millionaire. Askies. I didn't say all MPs. Askies. There are those MPs who earn more than 1 million. That's what. But look, let's not fight over that. I'm sorry, excuse me.
Okay, Minister.
Here's the punchline. E-tolls. Here's the punchline, E-tolls. We have probably been communicating this matter wrongly. We'll probably spend more time talking about the user pay principle, which is correct, than the actual substance of the housing freeway improvement project. That's what we should be talking about. Housing freeway improvement project which is aimed at managing the roads of Gauteng, improving the roads of Gauteng, removing congestion so that, you know, there can be movement and business can flow. And for that improvement, we need to make sure that the investment made there is returned. That's what it's all about, really. It's a return on investment for our own benefits, really. So maybe let's approach it like that. We've had an investment. Let's make sure that the investors get a return on their investment. Because otherwise, this thing gets confused. I mean, when Honorable Shibambu and myself go home, we go through about 4 toll gates, and we pay. So I think we just need to handle the matter better. And I repeat my request to the political parties in this house, please go and have a conversation with your supporters so that we can have the culture of payment back on the streets, in our homes. Masakane.
Okay, Minister. Maybe in closing, can you make sure that we have a proper system of track and trace by SARS? Yes. There is a problem of under-declaration by most industry. Tobacco, sugar, fuel. Can that system be in place, and when you come back here in February, you will give us a progress report? We know many companies which are operating illegal, legally, but are under-declaring tax. Billions of rands, let alone illicit tobacco smugglers. Thanks very much, Honorable Members. Let's adjourn the meeting.